The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This is Antonio Gibson, and you are listening to Roster Watch.
Ladies and gentlemen, Roster Watch Nation, welcome back to the Epic Roster Watch Podcast, brought to you by RosterWatch.com. My name is Alex Dunlap, joined, of course, by Roster Watch co-founder Byron Lambert. It's been a while since you've seen Byron on the old pod, man. You're used to seeing that disgusting trash, man. Byron, what the hell's going on, brother?
We had to find some reasons to pay the trash man a little bit of money, man. So I had to finally come up with some work for that guy after all these years.
And he starts making a little bit of money and he spends it on these $200 jumpsuits that are basically just sweatsuits.
I thought those were jumpsuits that somebody else paid $200 for that he picked up at the thrift store for a couple nickels.
We were walking around the combine and people were consistently complimenting Trash Man on his clothes, which to me just looked like literally sweatsuits.
That's part of his brand.
I can't believe it. Today we are going over some updates and just some talking points on the best ball cheat sheet that's going to be available at rosterwatch.com here in the next, I'd say within the next week or so. These things, I always start making them and it's just, you figure you just get into it and toss it up and make the changes as they go. But Byron, you know, being an architect of these cheat sheets, every little change creates another. What's that they call scope creep? Whenever you think all you need to do is change out one board on your deck, but you take the board up and you look under it and there's a joist that's rotten. And so you got to take out some other boards. And when that joist is rotten, you find out that there's some other part of the foundation there where there's a crack. And it's like, you can't just make one little change and then expect everything to be okay. And so we're just working through it. We're running simulations now, mainly on underdogs, to make sure that these teams show up with our allocations that we really want as far as player exposures positionally. This will be player-specific talk right now, but just so you guys know, you could be expecting this up over for our pro members at Roster Watch within the week or so. I don't know, Byron, do you want to talking about the Jaguars that made the big splash yesterday in free agency? I don't know if it was a splash. I felt like it was a splash, like a turd dropping into a punch bowl for some of these.
I figured we were just going to get straight to the main course, man. Let's get right to the heart of the matter, the core of this entire thing, man. I mean, don't you think the biggest signing of free agency so far is J.D. McKissic in terms of fantasy impact?
All right. Well, we could talk about that. I wish Trashman would be on the show so I could just tell him. I could see, like, do you see what all this J.D. McKissic stuff that you've been worried about all year with Antonio Gibson just does not matter? It just and now it doesn't. So, all right, that's fine. Let's talk about Antonio Gibson, currently going around 28, 29, so an early third-round pick on underdog at least. He's going behind guys like Saquon Barkley, Nick Chubb, DeAndre Swift, Alvin Kamara. All those dudes definitely have, you know, question. I mean, Saquon Barkley, clearly there'll be question marks with him. Injuries, new coaching staff, et cetera. Nick Chubb is still a committee back. DeAndre Swift, clearly a guy who is a committee back, but a really, really good one. Alvin Kamara, we don't know what's going to be going on with the offense, what's going to be going on with the quarterback position, any of this. And we're talking about a spread of like 9 players between all those guys. What do you think? I mean, where does Antonio Gibson fit in now that J.D. McKissick's gone for you?
Well, it looks like you guys were anticipatory on this move because pretty reasonably aggressive placement of Gibson on the sheet currently. So you guys were operating with some foresight here. At least you were, Alex. I don't think there's a lot of maybe not as much ground to be made up with Gibson as I might have anticipated before this pod, because you know, I feel like there's been a lot of action in free agency, but from a fantasy perspective, there's not a whole lot. This really just sent me head over heels. But when I saw this McKissick move, I just said, all right.
It's so weird that you think that that's the biggest move. I think that there's other moves that, what about Chase Edmonds and stuff? I mean, like there's a bunch of this stuff that I want to get into. I think that the McKissick thing, yes, I had anticipated it. Trash man refused to anticipate it. And even whenever I said, all right, well, what if we just bake in like half of the fact that McKissick's gone, right? And the fact that we had what's his name? What's the GM of the – not Marty Herney. What's the – Martin Mayhew told us at the Combine. You know, he said, like, look, we want to have JD back, but, you know, there are some things that we need to get done on our end as far as free agency. You know, we need to be talking with Terry – talking with Terry McLaurin about a possible extension, some other stuff like that. There's some things we really need to do before we're going to be able to commit to giving him what he probably wants. So we understand if JD's going to have to go elsewhere, if he can't wait around for us, you know? And so, I mean, I said, so Trashman, let's meet halfway and just say there's a halfway chance he's gone. And then Trashman starts coming up with this shit that, you know, well, Jarrett Patterson's still there. And do you remember Jarrett Patterson from Buffalo?
I mean, let's see what happens. I mean, there could still be an addition in a second or third wave of free agency, or maybe even somebody in the draft. But at this point, like you're thinking, all right, Antonio Gibson, like let's go. It's time to go Jonathan Taylor mode, you know, with Antonio Gibson at this point. He's totally uncontested. He's one of our favorite prospects. When he's healthy, we know he's looked like a beast in the NFL. So I guess when I look at the sheet as the players are positioned right now, I think the thing that stands out to me is I think I'm a little higher on Saquon Barkley than you guys are. But when I look above that, I mean, just hear me out. I think Antonio Gibson, I mean, at this point, he should elevate over
Chubb.
Nick Chubb. He should escalate over DeAndre Swift, in my opinion. Alvin Kamara, doesn't he have a 6-game suspension coming up this year from his shenanigans around the Pro Bowl? And
if that's true,
Las Vegas.
Has that been announced, or is that just what they think is going to happen?
They broke some dude's orbital. I mean, I don't think it's been totally resolved. As a matter of fact, there was another NFL player that ended up getting charged in this incident, as far as I understood.
Last I checked, it was that he could face a 6-game suspension.
Well, just that alone is enough to.
No, it's good. Yeah, that's good. That's good. I think Antonio. I think we need to make a big move on Antonio Gibson here.
Well, and here's the thing.
It goes against ADP, but I wonder. I mean, how much do you really move him up when his current ADP? How much is his ADP going to move up from 28.8 where it was on? It was at 28.8 on the 11th, whenever I recently pulled this ADP. So 4 days ago, he was at 28.8. When you have Alvin Kamara at 18.9, I mean, do you feel like with as far as the structure of the sheet that it kind of breaks the sheet? Do you think you can get one of those guys? And, you know, or if you get – because remember, if you get him up above Alvin Kamara, you forego the opportunity to maybe get like – go start out like – Derrick Henry and then CeeDee Lamb and then Antonio Gibson at value, if that makes sense. It's not just the running backs.
Well, these ADPs aren't going to stay like this for very long over at Underdog. And so from a construction perspective, if we're talking about just accumulating value, I see where you're coming from. But I also look at this and I say, man, in best ball, you can't really – I mean, I guess unless you're going to draft Alvin Kamara's backup, you can't win best ball if you're going to have some guy miss 6 games like your best player.
Yes.
You know, so
– and he's probably going to miss it, right? I mean, so I'm going to move up Antonio Gibson. We'll just see how that goes in simulations for right now. But I mean, I do get it. You mentioned Barkley. Do you like him better than Kamara at this point too?
I like Barkley better than Chubb, Swift, and Kamara. If he gets traded, which I don't think it looks like he's going to, it would be a workhorse somewhere. And even if he stays put, he's the lead guy. I think Saquon Barkley is one of the epic values in all of fantasy football right now. Dynasty, best ball. Hell, if his ADP stays depressed, I'm going to love him this year in redraft. This is a guy that we want to have an advantage on, Alex.
You're getting him at the end of this, like basically the end of the second round right now.
So. Have you ever heard of such a thing? That feels like robbery.
One of the best, prospects of like all time. It's so crazy.
And I love this because now we have Gibson butted up against Joe Mixon, who we said even from the Senior Bowl that Antonio Gibson looked a lot like a Joe Mixon. So it's just interesting from the way all this has unfolded as people who keep a close eye on the NFL and these prospects. It's interesting to see those guys right there in the same bucket. And then, I'm really interested to see. I'm very hopeful that Denver is going to let Javonte Williams have this thing to himself. That's going to be an absolute monster in Denver for him. And I'd say that's one of the next aspects of this sheet at the running back position up high that I'll be keeping a very close eye on.
Well, what Trash Man keeps doing is he refuses to move Javonte Williams off running back 4 in Dynasty until he knows that Melvin Gordon's gone. And then he's moving up to running back 2. And so like, for me, it's like with Javonte Williams, with his current sliding here on the best ball cheat sheet, I haven't completely baked in the Melvin Gordon being gone yet, even though it really feels like with Russell Wilson moving there and everything like that, they're not going to just turn this into another year with one bad quarterback and two good runners running the football. They're going to have to get rid of Melvin Gordon. The writing's on the wall. These inside guys I think Ben Albright has kind of hinted at it and stuff. Our good friend Ben, who I believe Jen's just scheduled to be on the podcast here in the next week or two. So we'll be able to talk to him about that. Okay.
If they keep Gordon or if they sign somebody else of note, that'll be an interesting discussion.
Well, if they keep Gordon, obviously we're in a whole different situation. Can we please talk about Christian Kirk and this $84 million deal? Can you believe this? A 4-year deal worth up to $84 million for the Jacksonville Jaguars. They go out and they make a damn priority to go out and pay during the first wave of free agency, but just during legal tampering. They got to go pay Christian Kirk a deal for up to four years, up to $84 million. They got to pay Zay. They just have to get Zay Jones on a 3-year deal worth up to $30 million. They go out and they get Evan Engram on a 1-year deal, which I believe is up to $10 million with incentives. And so that basically leaves, and DJ Chark, of course, Byron, you kept asking about him. What's going to happen? Picked up by, goes to Detroit. Interested to hear your thoughts there at the combine. You know, they did talk a lot. Dan Campbell did talk a lot about how they really needed a big bodied sort of outside stretch sort of receiver to open things up for those guys. I thought that was bad news for Josh Reynolds, but it turns out that they bring Josh Reynolds back. Now they're adding DJ Chark to the mix. It looks like Marvin Jones is still going to be around next year, because I was looking at Marvin Jones's contract earlier, Byron, and maybe you can let me know what you think about this. But this is so funny. I've looked at his contract three times today in my history. So in 2022, his base salary is $4.95 million, a $2.7 million signing bonus, and he's got roster workout and miscellaneous bonuses. He's an $8.7 million cap hit and represents 5.2% dead cap, $5.2 million dead cap. So he's not going to be going anywhere, right?
No, and he probably shouldn't. He was a good fit on that team. He still played well. He still looked like the Marvin Jones that we know and love. And I felt like there was a connection there with Trevor Lawrence. And, you know, even though they've brought some reinforcements in, these are all pretty young guys. I think it's pretty nice for them to have a veteran leader like Marvin Jones. So when you read those numbers like that, yeah, it, I think logic dictates he more than likely sticks around. So maybe the takeaway here is, I mean, I don't love it for any of these guys, obviously. I think it means if you are a Trevor Lawrence owner in Dynasty, that maybe you can feel a little bit better. Like I was telling Alex, I think this is going to be a situation where they just let Trevor Lawrence kind of play point guard, try to distribute the ball, get in the hands of all these playmakers. They're more than likely they're still going to be playing from behind a whole bunch. I guess he'll uncork over the top every once in a while to Marvin Jones and to, I guess, to the Jones brothers, Marvin and Zay. And then ETN, we know, is really a good pass-catching running back. So in real life, you don't get real thrilled about all this, but it does seem like it, if anything, this may help Trevor Lawrence's value a little bit in Dynasty. And I don't know, maybe he's – I mean, you're not going to draft him in redraft, but all of a sudden maybe he has some, like, waiver wire viability this year with a little bit of upside.
Oh, so you're done with the thought?
Yeah.
that didn't sound like it was a very, very definitive into a thought. I thought you might have been continuing on with some other point.
No. I might not like him as much as I like Jared Goff now that DJ Chark is in Detroit. But, I mean, I guess for me, the takeaway is I don't get it. Are you excited about any of the –
No, I'm just. I thought you were going to come bitch about, like I was bitching last night on Twitter, to all the cries of the Jaguars fans. I'm like, the Brandon Scherf, that's the kind of signing that you make right now during this first wave of free agency. Like, you're really going to go out and say we got to get Christian Kirk off the market. We got to pay him $21 million a year, and we got to pay Zay Jones $10 million a year and stuff. I said these are guys you should be kicking the tires on Like Zay Jones, you should be kicking the tires on the third wave of free agency. People talk about how he went to Las Vegas and really rejuvenated his career. And I just look at it, and I'm looking at the fantasy points per game last year, and let's just say in half point PPR, like was he even in the top 50? He wasn't. I mean, what kind of rejuvenation is this? I mean, hold on. Zay Jones, where's he? Wide receiver 96, averaging 5.6 points per game in PPR leagues last year, where he played 15 games out of the season. Zay Jones, over the course of the last 3 years, has scored 3 receiving touchdowns. He has had one game over 100 yards receiving in the last 3 years. How many games has he had over 60 yards receiving in the last 3 years? One. He's had one game over 60 yards receiving, or I'm sorry, 2 games over 60 yards receiving in the last 3 years. You're paying this guy $10 million a year?
What did his game log look like after the Ruggs incident last year? I feel like that's.
Do you remember when the Ruggs incident happened?
I mean, there of an emergence, plays down the stretch. I think out of
yeah. I mean, if it did, if the Ruggs thing happened in week 11, there was an uptick in targets last year for him. Starting in week 12 at Dallas, 7 targets, 5 targets, 7 targets, 9 targets, 8 targets, 10 targets, 8 targets, 8 targets. But he didn't do anything with them. I mean, even with all that stuff, the yardage totals, 59 in no touchdowns on 7 targets, 21 in no touchdowns on 5 targets, 25 in no touchdowns on 7 targets, 67 in no touchdowns on 9 targets, 50 in no touchdowns on 8 targets. Then the game at Indy, 120 on 10 targets, no touchdowns, versus the Chargers, 27 total yards on 8 targets. And at Cincy, he did have the 8 targets. He had 61 yards and a touchdown. But it just goes to show, even when he's getting this mass target volume down the stretch, I mean, starting in week 12 last year, 7, 12, 19, 28, 36, 46, 54, 62, 62 divided by 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I mean, we're talking 7.75 targets per game over the from week 12 on last year. And he only got you two games over 60 yards?
Yeah, so it's an odd touchdown signing. I mean, it is an odd signing early in free agency. I mean, it just tells me a few things. It tells me that for whatever reason, this personnel department in Jacksonville has a higher grade on Zay Jones than probably the rest of the league. So that is a little difficult to understand.
Look, I love everybody in chat. Shout out to Joey two times. Of course, shout out to Cody Carpentier up here in the chat, our great friend, Paul Hoover in the chat. I mean, these guys are showing up and simping for Zay Jones. Like he's saying that they're talking about the mental side, that Zay was the hardest working player in the team and all this stuff like that. And like, I can agree with the mental side. I mean, you're glad he's not going into hotels and taking his pants off and trying to jump through windows anymore. Right. But it's, I mean, the fact of the matter, like Paul Hoover saying, I like Zay Jones a lot. We drafted him, but he got into trouble. So we released. Right. So we released him. I agree. We like Zay Jones a lot. I mean, he was an all senior bowler for roster watch and stuff like me, but it's a weird time to. Yes.
That's the head scratcher. Cause what this tells me is that they want a couple of deep threats on the outside to keep people honest, but that's not really the game they're going to play. So it tells me that they have higher grade on Zay Jones for some peculiar reasons, and they made a little bit of a bizarre move there, kind of prioritizing him early. And the other thing it tells me is the type of football that they want to play with Trevor Lawrence. I mean, they want, like I said, this. I see this being a point guard, kind of short, average depth of target. I think they want to get Trevor Lawrence's confidence up, get his completion percentage up. Last year was rough. Get his confidence up. Hopefully, you know, maybe protect him a little bit so he doesn't get, you know, maybe not sacked quite as frequently if he has guys he can dump the ball off to. I mean, to me, this is all about the development of Trevor Lawrence. And again, a little bit unusual, but they came to the conclusion, it seems to me, that this is all about just having playmakers that he can efficiently get the ball in their hands at this stage of Trevor Lawrence's development. So we'll see how those both shake out. I think the Zay thing is very strange. We'll see how this shakes out for these guys.
Yeah, we'll see. One thing that, you know, just hitting real quick on the Evan Engram thing, I'd like to see what you think about him, because our good friend Scott Barrett, he tweeted this out earlier. I found it very interesting, something that I wanted to kind of look into. But Scott, as usual, you know, ahead of the curve here. So Doug Peterson, team tight end fantasy points scored rank. Okay. So, we know that Evan Engram now to the Jags. Okay. In 2014, his tight end production on his team was sixth, 2015, 11th, 2016, fourth, 2017, first, 2018, first, 2019, first, 2020 third. Of course, in 2021, Doug Peterson was not a coach, but basically through seven seasons, as Scott says, Doug Peterson's tight end was the team's number one receiver by receiving yards five times and the number two receiver by receiving yards three times. It goes along with your dink and dunk theory, Byron.
But here's the thing. I love Dan Arnold, and apparently Trevor Lawrence liked him quite a bit.
Yeah.
Down the stretch too. So is this, I believe Dan Arnold is also going to return.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Maybe Dan Arnold. Was there not some news about Dan Arnold? I forgot. There might not have been. Maybe it was just the Evan Engram news that made me think that there might've been Dan Arnold news, but I had thought about Dan Arnold too, Byron, this week. And that's probably why.
Yeah, so
he's on contract. He's on contract for another year. I mean, God damn! Didn't they trade away CJ Henderson for him?
So this is like a two tight end It's an interesting offense. It's an interesting offense. I mean, because they've got the two outside guys, and then they've got, I guess Christian Kirk will be the slot, and then Chenault is. You know, you guys ask if the ship had sailed at the combine on LaVisca Chenault, and
Balky looked at us like we had a butthole for a face when we asked about that.
Yeah, and
now they want to trade him. The ship has sailed.
Yeah, now it's coming home to roost a little bit, right?
Roster watch, y'all. I mean, it wouldn't be roster watch if somebody wouldn't on tilt. And whenever we come in and we shoot the arrow right through the heart of exactly what Balky's thinking and doesn't want anybody to know.
He wants to trade him. He don't want to have a bad pub out there.
Oh, yeah.
I guess I'd be interested to see if Doug Peterson had – did he run too many tight end offenses?
Well, I can always go back. That's not something I can pull up right. We can always go back and look at that whenever we're making the updates.
I don't know if we had.
I can't pull it up right
in Philadelphia yet.
Right,
it was the early days of
Goddard. But based on Scott Barrett's tweet, though, I mean, Scott's pretty well researched. It was a top 5 to 7 tight end. Cody Carpentier on. Cody, are you saying that Russell Gage to Tampa Bay did indeed happen, or are you saying you want that to happen? I can get on Twitter and look. I'm not sure how meaningful that really is, Byron.
Well, Tyler Johnson was terrible at the end of the year when he had an opportunity, and they need a third guy. Godwin had the late season ACL injury.
Yes, dude.
They were running Perriman out there. I mean, speaking of ships that have sailed.
I asked the head coach for the Falcons. I can't believe Arthur Smith. I asked him at the combine. I just said, you know, given Calvin Ridley's situation at that point, we didn't know about the year suspension. I said, what kind of priority does that put on Russell Gage bringing him back? He's like, Russell was a good player for us down the stretch last year. You know, he didn't act like they really wanted to bring him back. So Russell Gage comes in. Thank you, Cody. Thank you, Paul Hoover, for letting us know about that. Thanks to everybody here in chat and everybody here watching on YouTube.
That's a nice gift for Brady. Really?
Here's another thing, dude. How long do you think Godwin is going to have to be out? Because I'm looking at where he's going in best ball. And I'm just wondering, like, I mean, I've pushed him down a little bit, and I've moved Mike Evans up. I wonder, I mean, Chris Godwin, his current ADP is 53.2, and certainly at least a guy like Mike Williams, who's going 59.1, I think I would want more than him. I would want Chris Godwin more than maybe some of these guys. Like, the only guy who's going ahead of Chris Godwin that I think I would want him more than – right now is Tyler Lockett, just because I don't know what's going to happen with Tyler Lockett's situation. Like, what do you think about Godwin? Do you think that now that Brady's coming back, he feels like he's getting a little bit of a bump? Coming off these big knee injuries and stuff, I just wonder if it's one of these deals that he could be a little bit slower coming in. And if the Bucs do have deep playoff run hopes, we've seen those kinds of teams take it really easy on their star players whenever, you know, they really want those guys to be able to contribute down the stretch.
Well, this may be the reason they wanted a veteran like Russell Gage, who's looked pretty good recently, and they know from within the division. I would say that you can justify a little bit higher ADP in best ball more than you could in redraft, like because you can, right, you know, live without Godwin maybe for the first portion of the season in best ball and just bank on massive outbursts of production down the stretch that could still be useful in best ball. And when it comes to any considerations for redraft, I would be pretty tentative around Godwin. I mean, I can't imagine he's going to be available in the month of September or even useful in the month of September if he is available. So I think first month of the season, I wouldn't really count on him in redraft if I had to make a projection at this point, but
whenever the injury first happened, I remember the Pro Football Doc said that he would expect him to start the season out on the physically unable to perform list.
It makes sense. I
mean, so that's 6 weeks
injury. Yeah.
So why are we not, Why are people not baking that in? Kind of like they're not baking in this stuff with Alvin Kamara probably going to be out 6 weeks.
Happens every year, dude. We always find ADPs that are so far out of whack this time of year that they're impossible to understand. And this stuff all tightens up as we go. But, you know, this is where the value comes from.
So you mentioned we talked about the DJ Chark, just the other side of the fallout from the Jacksonville stuff. Does that have any bearing to you on Amon-Ra St. Brown, which is how epic he was to end last season? And then one thing I've been having a hard time trying to figure out is now that Braxton Berrios is coming back. I can't believe I'm actually saying it like this, but does that have anything to when you think about Elijah Moore versus Amon-Ra St. Brown, these guys are apart by like five spots on Underdog. Do you have a thought on these two second-year players who you would rather have in best ball?
He was very, very close. You'd probably have to prioritize St. Brown just based on his late-season performance. But, boy, I'm pretty bullish on Elijah Moore. We saw some real, real flashes out of him before he got injured there towards the end of the season. So I think logic would dictate maybe St. Brown.
So the Chark stuff doesn't bother you at all. I mean, it doesn't bother you at all.
It's not the best news, but I'm not sure Elijah Moore is, St. Brown really emerged as a top dog. So, and even in terms of volume. So I think even if he takes a step back there, even though you could argue that he, you know, actually Chark could kind of open things up for him.
Yeah. I see the same way. Those players are complementary. Whereas honestly, and I know that they're not the same kind of player, but with the way that they're utilized, I mean, we've seen these games wherever the Jets seriously use Braxton Berrios on like two and three different end arounds and rushing touches, that stuff down in the red zone. You know, they use him out of the slot. They use him as an offensive weapon the same way that you could see them using Elijah Moore, even though, Elijah Moore is clearly the much, much, much better prospect. It's like they're maybe a little bit more redundant than Amon-Ra St. Brown is so I'm going to switch.
Yeah,
these
I guess it's not as he looked like he was. Elijah Moore looked like he was on the fast track to being the star wide receiver with the Jets when he started to break out before the injury later in the year. And so that gets you real excited about him going into year two with the development of Zach Wilson, especially considering how good of a prospect that we thought Moore was. But I think, to be fair, his where he is in the pecking order and the target distribution is maybe still a little bit less clear, even though it feels obvious where he's headed. Whereas St. Brown, I feel like we really saw it and he really solidified himself. And yeah, maybe he takes a little setback here. But I think you have a little higher level of confidence with what I think saw out of St. Brown down the stretch. You know, you still have Corey Davis there with the Jets, and you know, we'll see what happens with a few of these other guys, but they've still got a couple other warm bodies over there that get in the mix. So yeah, it's a close call. I like them both, but I would lean towards St. Brown if I had to rank their ADPs. I would say St. Brown, I would project a little higher at this
point. But you like both those guys better than Amari Cooper in a Cleveland Browns uniform?
I don't think so.
You like Amari Cooper better?
I mean, no Jarvis Landry.
Yeah.
I know they got the tight ends there, but yeah, I mean, I think that Cooper's a stud. And, you know, we know what he is, but he's a pretty studly player and it's not a good situation, but right now the target volume looks enormous for him. So,
and he's only like 27. Do you like,
that's just ridiculous. How is it? He is just
came into the league at age like 19 or something.
Yeah, I know.
Where do you have DJ Moore in relation to those guys? Amon-Ra St. Brown, Elijah Moore, and Amari Cooper. Do you think DJ Moore is at the bottom of that pecking order? Because DJ Moore is the much higher ADP than any of them.
Well, a lot of this will depend on if they get Deshaun Watson or not in Carolina. But right now, without any more information, I would put Cooper over DJ Moore. Mm-hmm. And That's probably have it. Cooper, DJ Moore, St. Brown, Elijah Moore.
Okay. That's how we'll do it for right now. You're on the clock. You got to make a choice, Byron. You've drafted a running back, a receiver, and a tight end. And now you have to choose between Travis Etienne and Amari Cooper. What are you picking?
I'd go with Etienne.
Tough though, right? It feels like it's priced in pretty good.
Yeah, I think that's fine.
If that's a decision on the sheet, do you think Etienne versus Terry McLaurin is a tougher choice?
Yeah, it feels a little tougher to me.
Okay, so I'll move Etienne up a little bit. I think we're going to be pretty high on Etienne, and I think that's the way to be. I think it's good to be higher on Etienne as far as who the guy's going to be, the singular Jags running back, than these wide receivers that are, even though they're getting so paid, are going to really, really cannibalize each other.
You know, we won't spend too much time on it, but you did mention DJ Chark. I did want to take a second just to say DJ Chark is a good player. He's a good player and a good wide receiver. Only a one-year deal, but that was a nice ad for the Lions. I'd be curious to see. I mean, this rookie quarterback class isn't looking so good, so kind of feels like, I mean, are the Lions kind of rolling with Jared Goff potentially this year? And, I mean, not that we can get too excited about him ever, but I do think that all of a sudden Goff is like a pretty decent waiver wire quarterback option as we look ahead to this next year. They're going to be playing from behind. He's going to be dumping it to Swift and Hawkinson and Chark. That's not a bad group of receivers.
What does the Mitchell Trubisky Pittsburgh signing mean to you as it relates to Deontay Johnson and stuff like that?
I mean, it's definitely I think you got to take a little deduction. You know, for Deontay Johnson, I mean, he had a real special chemistry, as bad as Roethlisberger was. I mean, he was just a target monster with Roethlisberger, and I don't expect Trubisky to be able to come in and replicate that.
We were just talking, Deontay Johnson is going ahead of the Terry McLaurins, the Amari Coopers, the DJ Moores, the Amon Ra, all those guys. I mean, would you just for now kind of take a hands-off approach to Deontay Johnson, where when they have this bridge quarterback, Mitchell Trubisky, and probably just based on what Kevin Colbert told us at the combine, where Cody's in the chat, maybe he can tell us the exact quote. I forget what it was, but it was something about how he said that there's like starting level NFL quarterbacks in this draft. I tweeted it last night, but it makes all the sense in the world for me that what Kevin Colbert did was bring in Mitchell Trubisky. And Byron, what did Ozzie Newsome do in his farewell draft? He made sure that team was left with a quarterback of the future, that he felt like he left the team in good hands before he moved on to greener pastures. It feels like Kevin Colbert's going to bring in a quarterback. If that's the case, it's going to be a Mitchell Trubisky, new rookie quarterback, kind of probably a little bit of a kind of slinky deal there, you know, step to step with a slinky, who knows, from game to game, which one of those quarterbacks you're going to have. I don't like that kind of situation for Deontay Johnson.
No, I think this is a clear downgrade for Deontay Johnson at this point. And I would take Cooper over him. I think you could argue he belongs in that DJ Moore bucket.
Would you like Amon Ra or Elijah Moore more than him?
You know, here's what I would like. I would like Amon Ra and Elijah Moore versus ADP. So they may not necessarily live higher on the sheet, but in terms of leverage versus ADP, I'm more interested in Elijah Moore and St. Brown if I'm getting a discount.
I got it.
On Moore and Deontay Johnson.
Do you want J.K. Dobbins or do you want Deontay Johnson?
Probably Dobbins. I think Dobbins.
That's good. Okay. Here's the quote from Cody. It's a quality class. There might not be guys at the top, but there'll be starting caliber quarterbacks in this class. Thank you, Cody. So
that's a Colbert quote.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, they've been attached to Malik Willis a whole bunch, right?
Well, and Kenny Pickett, right?
Oh, from right there in the area.
Pitt. Like everybody wants them to sign him. So
how embarrassing is it though to roll out a quarterback with such puny hands?
It's bad weather up there. It's bad weather up there. As Siege pointed out though in the podcast that he did with us, he said somehow in the 2021 season they didn't have any bad weather games. You got to go back to 2020 to see him fumbling his ass away in these bad weather games. I didn't think he was that terrible during that rainy day at the Senior Bowl, but yeah, I mean, pretty. That'll be interesting to see what they do with those guys. All right, we did just a few more guys we need to talk about here. There was somebody who asked us. Paul Hoover asks, where do you guys put J.D. McKissic now with the Bills offense? It's probably a good question as it relates to Devin Singletary, because Devin Singletary does come into focus around the time when you're looking at guys like, you know, a week, certainly, if you look kind of down here where we have him a little bit suppressed, because I'm not going to be taking Devin Singletary at the end of the sixth round or any time during the seventh round, just based on what we saw last year, even with the kind of the lip service that we heard for him out of Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean at the combine. To me, James Conner, once he signed the 3-year extension with Arizona, there's no way that I'm not taking James Conner over Devin Singletary, right?
Leonard, you know, Fournette, that might have been the other biggest fantasy news, right? When you mentioned Edmonds earlier, but it's not Edmonds' arrival in Miami that's the biggest news. It's the Edmonds vacating. It's clearly going to be James Conner, Eno Benjamin show.
Yeah, man. I mean, I moved James Conner up about 20 spots as far as where, like, probably the biggest differential as far as ADP versus where we have him on the sheet, just because it feels like I would rather have people take it. James Conner, I mean, I know it's not going to feel as sexy, but I mean, I just want him more than like AJ Dillon or Devin Singletary, goodness. Or, you know,
not even a question. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, Conner looked like a stud, and it's just a good offense for him. And, you know, I think even a year
later, a lot of touchdowns,
fine. Yeah. I mean,
a lot of touchdowns.
He's in a really good spot. So you ask about McKissic. I mean, I think McKissic's placement should be the same as if he had stayed in Washington and you'd had a real honest ADP on him, or an honest placement or evaluation of him. Had he stayed in Washington, performing the way he's been performing, I think he's every bit deserves that same type of ranking.
Do you like him more than, say, Kenny Gainwell or Daryl Henderson?
Yes.
Do you like him more than Jerick McKinnon, Khalil Herbert, or Rashad White, the rookie out of Arizona State?
I would say so. I'm not totally clear on what's going to happen with McKinnon at this juncture. I guess it's some form of a timeshare, but
yeah.
I think I would say so. I mean, especially for PPR, I mean, I think McKinnon's going to be pretty studly.
Okay. So now we're talking about, I mean,
not McKinnon, McKissic.
So it's half PPR. Certainly not higher than Gus Edwards or James Robinson, right? For best ball, we're not worried about Robinson being out the first 6 months. I mean, we can't do it. I mean, you can't do that.
Robinson,
Alexander,
he's at the end of the year.
But see, like his ADP, J.D. McKissic has an ADP in the 200s, whereas we're talking about guys like James Robinson, an ADP of 140. It's like we can't. That'll break the sheet.
So he's going to be our big riser, either that or he's just going to be one of these guys that, because of who he is, he's going to consistently provide value. So we should own some McKissic if this is the kind of ADP we're going to get on him.
Okay, so if that's the kind of ADP we're going to get on him, how about I'm going to move Gus – LaVisca Chenault needs to be moved way the hell down the sheet, doesn't he?
Yep.
We don't even know what's going to happen with him, so I'm just going to take LaVisca Chenault and just bury him. I mean, should he be under like Isaiah McKenzie or something? I think I'll just do that. God, what a fall for him. And then how about – maybe we add in J.D. McKissic. I mean, we can add him in just right after Jerick McKinnon. How about that? Do you want him above
that
McKinnon?
That sounds fair.
Okay. And above Daryl Henderson. And above Kenneth Gainwell. And above Ronald Jones. Does all that sound about right?
For now, it does.
Okay.
I sure will be interested to see what happens with Fournette and Ronald Jones.
Chase Edmonds in Miami. I just feel like we really need to move him up. He's got a 125 ADP right now. We currently have him kind of sandwiched in around where, I mean, I moved him up basically into this area of the Miles Sanders, Kareem Hunt, Cordarrelle Patterson, Ramondre Stevenson, Isaiah Spiller type of area, about 25 spots ahead of where he would have been. Do you like it? I mean, when you just like Kenneth Walker, Tony Pollard, Rashad Penny, Miles Sanders, how do you see Chase Edmonds now in a Mike McDaniels offense, which comes from that San Francisco lineage where they've sort of used these smaller – I mean, Chase Edmonds isn't exactly as tiny small, but they've used, you know, they use the Elijah Mitchells and the Raheem Mosterts and these dudes out of the backfield. There's no other running backs there to speak of. Yeah, I think Chase Edmonds is good. I think he's a good player. They obviously really like him and envision him there in the system. So I believe he does at least belong, even though his current ADP is only about 125 to 130. I think he belongs in this area of running backs with ADPs of like 95 to 105. Kenneth Walker, Miles Sanders, Tony Pollard, Rashad Penny, Kareem Hunt. I mean, that's about where you should live, right? That was my initial instinct.
Yeah, I value him about as much as I did last year. I think there'll be still some form of a timeshare committee in Miami, but clearly
you have to value more than last year, right? Because like,
well, I mean, he was good last year. I mean, there was times where he didn't play or he's injured or whatever, but he, especially early in the year, I mean, he was happy. Look, it's interesting. He was kind of like an Austin Eckler light in terms of his profile, at least through a big portion of the season, where he was like, I want to say he was like four or five targets a game. You know, he's that 210 pounder. He was more of like a, I think what 13, 12, he was more like 12 to 14 touches than kind of like a 16 or 17 that somebody like Eckler had. So then ultimately he ended up in a split with Connor once Connor got traction in the offense. But Edmonds was good. He had his big breakouts. He was pretty valued going into the season. I think he was a pretty valuable player when he was healthy. Edmonds was last year. So whether people gave him the respect that he deserved, I'm not sure. But my level of respect for Edmonds last year was pretty high when he was healthy and from a fantasy perspective. And I treat him about the same, maybe a little bit more upside in this situation.
Only four games last year with less than four targets for Chase Edmonds. Wild, huh? Only four games with less than four targets for a running back. They're going to, dude, Chase Edmonds belongs above Kareem Hunt?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's interesting. That's one of the comps kind of last year. That might have been the other one that I couldn't think of was a Kareem Hunt had that similar profile there for a while last year. Here's what I'll say is I do think it's probably still a committee, but I don't think Edmonds, it's unlikely that anybody outperforms him. Any other running back on the Dolphins, it's pretty likely that he turns out to be the best running back that they have. Now, does that mean his touches are going to go through the roof?
Yes. Yes. It means his touches are going through the roof. All the Chase Edmonds in Miami.